guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
It's talking Twins time. That's right. It's Monday. Again, Zolgad, Jake DePue as always, executive producer, busy as he always is, Declan Goff. And let's see. Twins won four consecutive against Detroit. Jake DePue going into the break against those hated Tigers. You thought to yourself, oh boy, this is exciting. There could be something good right around the corner. No, actually, I didn't think that. And then they go to Detroit and play three games, including a doubleheader on Saturday, and they get swept. And there is further news now or information surfacing from various reports about two of their biggest name players in Byron Buxton and Jose Barrios. So with your approval, Jake DePue, I'd like to start there. What do you think?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. Friday morning, I believe it was The Athletic or late Thursday night, The Athletic published a Ken Rosenthal story, and Ken is one of the great information men in baseball. So this is correct. It either comes from the Twins or the Byron Buxton camp, that the Minnesota Twins are actively trying to sign Byron Buxton to a long-term contract, despite the fact that he is often injured and out right now, that there are ongoing talks. It sounds like it painted a picture of ongoing talks. But if the talks fall apart before the July 30th deadline, or there's just an assessment made that Buxton can't be signed, that Buxton could be traded by the deadline, or in my opinion, and I'm just saying this, more likely to me in the winter after the season. So that was the first one that came out, and I'd like to talk about that, but I will give you, Jake, before turning it over to you, I will give you the Jose Barrios story that came out this morning. Phil Miller, Dateline from Detroit, where the Twins were in the Star Tribune. And Barrios and Buxton have one thing in common. They're both going to be free agents after the 2022, so we still have a year season. Jose Barrios made it very clear to Phil, and it looks like Phil talked to him alone, that he is looking forward to the opportunity. This comes as no surprise to explore free agency. And I will give you what really is the key quote from this story. Quote, I will have been waiting 6 years, almost seven, to get where every player wants to be, a free agent able to maximize our value, Barrios said. So it's different now. We are in a good position and we'll see what the best deal is going to be. And by the way, it does not sound like there are active talks with the Barrios camp and the Twins. All right. That's a lot to digest, but the season is a mess. It's gone off the rails. That happened long ago. On these two players, what do you think, Jake DePue, is the best approach? And I guess most importantly, what does your gut tell you about what's going to happen here?
Well, I think the best approach from the Twins' perspective is to try to sign both of them to an extension. I don't think that's going to happen. It sounds like for sure with Barrios, or at least it's very unlikely. And I totally get where he's coming from. Why would you sign an extension at this point? You know, when you're this close to free agency, especially with the possibility of no season in 2022, or at least an abbreviated season, you might as well just wait it out. So I think the Twins would have to go really above market value to sign Barrios to an extension. Buxton, to me, is the more interesting. I mean, they're both interesting, but what to offer Byron Buxton is fascinating to me. It's so interesting because, like, you have this guy who's basically Willie Mays right now, you know, in terms of the numbers he's putting up and his defensive value. But he plays in, what, about a third of the games that the Twins have played over the last 3 years? Something like that. It's like 38% or whatever. So, personally, I would give him $100 million. I really would, because I think it's so rare to have a player with this level of talent in your organization, and that can be a game changer on this level. And he really can, offensively and defensively, be a game changer in a way that very few players in the sport have the ability to do. So I would risk it. It is a huge risk. There's no question it's a huge risk with his injury history, but I would give him five for $100 million. What I would first offer him, and what I would hope that he would at least consider, is something with shorter term, but a really high average annual value. So something like 3 for $75. That would kind of be my starting point if I were the Twins. Now, what do I think is going to happen? What do my spidey senses tell me?
Yeah.
I still think Barrios is going to be traded, and I'm in the minority on that opinion, I think, but I feel like the Twins know that they are not going to sign him to an extension at this point. It sure, or at least it sure seems like that. And so you're basically only giving up 1 year of Jose Berríos, because this year doesn't matter anymore, to get a bunch of prospects. And as I said last week, I think that Falvey and Levine are still, they have enough hubris about pitching that I think they can turn the prospects they get into multiple Berríoses, you know? So I still think they're going to move him. I don't think that would be the right call. And I think if you're going to retool for 2022 as opposed to rebuild the way that they have said that they're going to do, then keeping Berríos on makes sense. But if they can get back, not just prospects, but maybe one pitcher who's already at the MLB level, maybe is in his first or second year and is controllable, then that might make some sense. The other thing I think that we should keep in mind that we haven't really talked about is there's probably going to be expanded playoffs, you know, with this new CBA. Whenever the CBA is finally agreed to, and it could be, you know, 2023, but I think we'll probably have seven playoff teams. And so that lowers the bar in terms of what you need to compete and just get in the tournament. So that could play into things a little bit as well. But my gut tells me that they're going to move Berríos. I don't know if they'll get an extension with Buxton Dunn. I really don't. But I don't think they'll move him until the offseason if they don't get an extension done. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
On Berríos, I think the price of poker is pretty simple. Like, you know, I think the Zach Wheeler contract is a starting point now. I think this guy's going to want to be paid, and I've been saying this for a while, like a 2022 ace. So you can say all you want about, well, look, he's really not an ace, and we can agree to disagree, or hell, we can agree. But this is a guy who I don't think feels any real, and this is not a criticism, any real allegiance to the Twins. I don't think he does. Yeah. I don't think he thinks, and this is correct, that the manager really trusts him, because he treats him like a third starter. Like, he'll just go yank him out of games. That Astros game, if you're a competitor, should have driven you crazy. That Astros playoff game I would have been throwing garbage cans, not banging on garbage cans, but throwing garbage cans. That would have pissed me off beyond belief. And Berríos, right or wrong, has always sort of, I think, had a perception that the Twins are sort of cheap. And so if the Twins are not going to come to him with an absolute home run contract, which, by the way, I would consider. So I'm with you here. I'm with you. He is your best pitcher. And I know you didn't develop him, but until you show me that you can develop guys, he's what you got. But if you're going to say we can't pay him, then I think you trade him by July 30th, because, and Jake, you're in mentioning it exactly right. You can't assume that you know when or if 2022 is going to start. And the one thing I can tell you if it doesn't start, what's going to happen is at the end, one of the final agreements is that you can't have tolled a contract. And so Jose Berríos is literally going to, there's a potential, not play his way into being a free agent. And at that point, you lose him, you lose all control. So teams are paid to think worst case. I mean, that's the thing too. They're not paid to think, but if we start next season, no, either you pay him now, or he's going to walk. So on Berríos, I'm all for keeping him. I don't think that they will. This is one reason why I'd be very tempted to make calls, though, on Josh Donaldson and almost give him away if I can get some of that money to use on like a Berríos contract. If I don't have to pay another team to take Josh, which if I take a really low-level prospect, I can probably dump a lot of that salary. So that's the first one. On Buxton, 5 years, $100 million should have been the starting point. The most disturbing thing about the Rosenthal report was not the potential consequences. It was the starting offer, which was referenced, and this obviously came probably from the Buxton camp. The Aaron Hicks 7-year, it said it would be north of what Hicks got, which was 7 years, I think $70 million, okay? That's not a starting point for Buxton. I know he's hurt and I know it sucks, but Byron Buxton, you already screwed him 2 years ago or 3 years ago on service time. And as you said, Jake, and you're right, when he can play, he's been Willie Mays this season, and you're starting him with an Aaron Hicks comp. That to me is an invitation for him to say, okay, screw it. I'll walk. And this will be the closest that we will get. For all we complain about this and worry and fret and get gray hairs, this will be the closest comp the Twins will have to the whole Ortiz, oh my God, he could be great.
Absolutely.
So that's why, but I hate the fact that they started negotiations like they did. Like, I'm not saying that you pay him Mike Trout money, but I am saying that really the comp you picked was Aaron Hicks. I don't like that.
And here's the other thing with Buxton. So it makes logical sense for the Twins to offer him something. I'm just throwing this out there, but like 4 for 70 or 4 for 80, and then have a bunch of incentives based on games played because of his injury history. But, and I tweeted this a few days ago, the problem with that is if you're Buxton, why would you trust the Twins to play that out fairly and honestly after they manipulated your service time in 2018, right? So like, you could very easily see a scenario where he has these huge incentives based on games played, right? And they're sitting him or they're putting him on the IL when he says he's fine. And that could lead to a ton of animosity between the player and the team. And I just don't think he would agree to that in the first place because of what they did to him in 2018. And so that's one of the reasons why that was a bad move. You know, like you can say that was a good move long term because they get the extra year. I would argue that's a bad move because yeah. And Buxton still hasn't, he's still upset about that, I think. And so, you know, they made their own bet on that, you know? And so I think they're going to have to offer him, I think they're going to have to go above and beyond what they're comfortable with to get him because of, in part, because of that animosity. And because I think he feels like if he makes it to free agency and is healthy, he's going to get a huge payday. Right. So I don't know. I mean, I would love to see them lock him up, and I think it's worth the risk. And if he ends up being hurt over the course of that contract, you know, that could potentially take down, you know, those years because, you know, you're not going to have a lot of money to give out to free agents. But it's just, he's such a unique player, and it's so rare for this organization to have somebody like that. I'm willing to put all of my eggs in the Buxton basket and hope. You know, because I think it was Phil that tweeted out a few days ago, like, we're always worried about David Ortiz or whatever. Byron Buxton, that's a legitimate worry with him, right? That he goes to the Mets or somebody else and becomes that superstar.
He could be the one.
He could be the one. Exactly. And he's still, what, only 27, 28. Mm-hmm. So if you give him 4 or 5 years, you're getting him through the rest of his prime. And even if he loses that speed in a couple of years, he's proven that he can be an elite hitter. You know, so like he may not be that platinum glove center fielder when he's 32, but if he's still hitting for power the way he has the past couple of years, he's still a great player. So I just, if you have to choose, well, let me ask you guys this. You have to choose between Buxton and Berríos, right? And let's say it's both in the 5 for 100 neighborhood. Who do you pick? For me, it's Buxton for sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I have to go Buxton. I just have to go Buxton. I think he makes too much of an impact when on the field and when he's healthy. And even though this team doesn't have any pitching right now, if I sold Jose Berríos, I know I'm going to get 2 top 100 prospects and hopefully someone that can step in pretty soon and help my rotation. So I would go Buxton. I would lean Buxton.
I'd go Buxton, but I also would say this. Jim Poled, a week ago on Sunday, I believe, on the TRN, Twins Radio Network, essentially said, we could sign them both. And my question would be, why can't you? Why not? What's stopping you? These are two uniquely talented players that, and the Buxton thing is too, now I do not think under any circumstance he gets traded before the deadline. Like, I just don't see it. He's hurt. I don't think it makes sense. But if we're moving at the route that we're going at right now, and Berríos is traded by July 30th, and then Buxton is traded in, you know, take your pick, December or something, or November. What's your message at that point? What are you telling people at that point? And by the way, then I have to trust that you're right on player development, especially pitching wise. And so far you've shown me almost nothing.
A lot of
people who might buy tickets at that point in time can't be blamed for checking out.
Yeah, I mean, if if Byron Buxton and Jose Berríos are both not on this roster in opening day 2022, whenever that opening day is, then you're sending a message that this is a rebuild, not a retool. And all the messaging we're hearing from the Twins right now is retool.
Yep.
Falvey was just on MLB Network. I just saw it on Twitter right before this podcast saying, you know, we still believe in the roster, using the term retool over and over, right? So, like, that's what we're hearing now. But if those two guys aren't on the roster and they don't get legitimate MLB-ready talent back, then it's clearly a major rebuild. And that's not where Falvey and Levine want to be. Their whole goal in this, and they obviously haven't accomplished that because look at this year, but their whole goal in this is to be consistently competitive every year, to give themselves a chance. You get rid of your best pitcher and your best position player, that's not going in that direction at all. So, and the other question that we've been asking for the last couple of months on this podcast is, do you trust them to get back the type of prospects to correctly evaluate the type of the prospects that they need to rebuild quickly, because they haven't shown an ability to do that, you know? And they have, it's not just that they have a scouting problem, in my view, they have a self scouting problem. They haven't correctly evaluated their own players in their own organization, which is really a huge problem, because these are the guys that you see every day and you're getting reports on every day. And you just go down the list, from Akil Baddoo to Nick Anderson to trading away Ryan Pressly, Oscar Ynoa, Lamont Wade, Tyler Wells, who's having a really good year in Baltimore. They didn't add to the 40-man. Zach Littell, a guy named Luis Gill, who they traded for Jake Cave back in 2018, is now on the Yankees 40-man roster, is putting up great numbers as a starting pitcher in AA and now in AAA. Like, the list goes on and on. And so you really have to question whether they would get back the guys that they want to get back, and whether they did develop them correctly.
Let's get back to Akil Baddoo, because I got a question there. Okay. And Jake, you follow the minor league teams for the Twins a lot more closely than I do. So how do you, when all he has to do is be protected on the 40-man, so this is 40-man roster, how do you make this mistake when I believe you protected a guy, if I'm correct, like Astudillo? You protected guys that were okay, but probably wouldn't be claimed. I don't understand. How does a guy like that with any, I mean, technically nobody with upside should fall through that crack unless you've given up on them, which I don't think they had. I think they thought to themselves, we just don't have room. It's very confounding to me.
Yeah, when you watch him play, I mean, this is a guy with power. I mean, he is absolutely just torn it up against the Twins this season, but he's a guy with power and speed. He plays a good center field. You talk about Buxton insurance, right? You talked a lot about Jackie Bradley Jr. in the offseason, Buxton insurance. Akil Baddoo could have been that guy. He could have been a fourth outfielder on this team, even if he started in the minors, right? He could have ended up being a fourth outfielder on this team by May or so and stepped right in for Buxton in center field when Buxton went down. He could have been that Jackie Bradley Jr. And so, you know, he was hurt. He got hurt in, I believe, 2019. And so they were probably looking at him and saying, well, he didn't play much in 2019. He didn't play at all in 2020. But you have to know his skill set. You have to know this is a guy with speed and power who can play a strong center field. Like, you don't give up on those types of guys, especially when you just have to add them to the 40 man. This is not a fringe reliever. You know, as much as I've ripped him for Nick Anderson, and that was a horrible move, he's a reliever. And there's more volatility there, and I get that. It was still a terrible move to not add him, and I said that at the time. But with Baddoo, I mean, this is a center fielder who's incredibly athletic and gifted, and it just that blows my mind. And so that tells me that they have a self-scouting problem, that the evaluations that they're getting from their minor league people are not correct, at least in the case of Baddoo, and certainly others as well, like Oscar Ynoa and Tyler Wells, you know? So this is something that they need to fix on an organization-wide level, you know? And it obviously it starts at the top with Falvey and Levine, but they've got tons of evaluators looking at these guys and providing reports. And I just don't understand how you could look at a guy like Baddoo and say he doesn't deserve a 40-man spot when a lot of these fringe relievers that they've added, you know, throughout the offseason, like Ian Hamilton and guys like that.
Exactly.
How you could give them a spot.
Yes. Right? I mean, you're giving guys that are journeymen at times a spot. And okay, I think it's fine to sign them, but don't worry about where they are as far as are they on our 40-man so they can't get claimed or something. Who cares? Yeah, it's just I think the most eye-opening thing is people that I perceive to be pretty smart are having the problem you're talking about, which is self-evaluation of your own team, which might be the most important thing possible. Because, I mean, you've got them. Now you got to decide who to keep. There's nothing more important than that. That's how you build your team. And if it was just one guy, I'd be like, okay, that too bad, but it happens. But it's not one guy. It's what you're talking about, which is more and more this trend of guys leaving. And then it's like, could have used him. And instead you've got, you know, Jake Cave, God bless him. So,
Well, and just real quick,
yeah.
I was, you know, watching the All-Star game on Tuesday and you see Kyle Gibson in there. And it's like, look, we watched Gibson for years, right? We watched him nibble. We watched him be inconsistent. But clearly the Rangers have unlocked something in him that the Twins and Wes Johnson weren't able to unlock,
yep.
You know? And so you have to also ask yourself, what is it that these other organizations are able to do that we're not? Because you saw that with Presley when he was traded, and you're seeing it with Kyle Gibson. Now, we saw Kyle Gibson have good halves in the past. He had a few really good halves. So maybe that's what this is. But still, when you see him out there in the All-Star game, he's like second in the league in ERA. You have to wonder, like, why wasn't Wes Johnson able to unlock this? Why didn't the Twins see this? Because they had no interest in retaining him.
No, hell
after
no.
2019.
No.
You know?
No. And they,
so,
yeah. They didn't come close to unlocking anything with Kyle Gibson.
Right, right. And so I just, you know, the league is just scattered with these guys who have left the organization and excelled. And it's just a bad look. It's a bad look for the front office.
Hot Twins take. I think Wes Johnson's in trouble. I think he might be the fall. I think he might be the fall guy. Cause he was 1000%, you know, college guy. Flavor of the year, right? Oh, look at what he can do. Let's look at more guys like Wes Johnson. To have this many pitchers not develop, and I mean, it's getting to be across the board pretty bad. I think I have to think that there is going to be a fall guy for a team that's this bad and disappointing. Like, I can't believe everybody escapes fine. I wouldn't be surprised if the hitting coach and the pitching coach are in trouble.
Well, there's precedent. I mean, they fired Garvin Elston after 1 year,
yes.
In 2018 when the pitching wasn't up to par. So, you know, I mean, their pitching was good in 2019 and 2020. So Johnson does have that on his resume, but it's been so bad this year.
Right.
What are they like? I think they're like second to last in team ERA. It's something like that.
And it's been bad across the board too much too. Like there's no one area where you're like, but that's okay.
Nothing. And I mean, there's really nobody to point to in terms of development, you know, other than Taylor Rogers, but he's been in the system for years. So it's impossible to know whether Wes Johnson is at fault or not. But when you talk about a fall guy, like a lot of teams will fire their hitting coach or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to fire somebody to send a message that this is not okay, Johnson would be the obvious candidate, whether that's justified or not, because the pitching has been so bad. And again, they did it with Garvin Elston. So maybe they'll do it with him as well. You know, it's just they have the fact that they hired Wes Johnson from college. I thought was a really creative move, but it also suggests, you know, that maybe they think they know something that other teams don't, and they're able to pick these guys out of these kind of. He was like the pitching coach at Arkansas, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And I just wonder if maybe they got a little bit too creative there and it backfired. This is all speculation. I have no idea. But that makes me think that maybe they'll stick with him because they do have a tendency to stick with their guys, as probably all front offices do. So we'll see. But the pitching has been a complete disaster, just a complete disaster. And I think I saw a Wes Johnson quote where he said, like, he's shocked by it or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, okay, you're the pitching coach.
But that's worse. The fact you're shocked is worse. You're supposed to know what's going on here, Wes. I just feel like somebody has to pay the price, has to pay some price here, because this isn't like disappointing. If this was, they're a third place team. I didn't see that coming. They're a last place team right now. They're awful. Like, I just don't see how you escape. How do you tell the fan base, just be patient. We'll be back next year after what amounts to a potential 100 loss season. So I think somebody's got to go. And Rocco's Rocco's not going. So I think somebody probably has to go. No.
You don't think that's a possibility?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think he's now on a warm to hot seat beginning 2022, but I don't see any way that to me, that would be where Falvey and Levine couldn't swallow that hard. Like I think on Wes Johnson, it would hurt their pride a little bit, but I could also see offering him up to the masses as, well, this didn't work out so well. You fire Baldelli, which, I mean, they're, you could make the case for sure, as we've talked about, but I don't think their egos could take saying the manager who led us to back-to-back titles and that we handpicked to be our guy. And by the way, you know, let's keep in mind, is carrying out the vision and the mission of Falvey right. and Levine. This is not a, hey, Rocco, you're our manager. Write the lineup card and go get them. This is a, we all work in sync. I mean, for all we know, they have at times texted him in the dugout. I don't know. But I think it would take a lot for them. That would be really hard for them to go to Jim Poulet and Dave St. Peter and be like, we're going to blow him out.
The Meadows at Mystic Lake is hosting the 2021 Land O'Lakes Legends Classic August 6th and 7th. See some of the greatest names in the history of women's golf as they compete in the inaugural Land O'Lakes Legends Classic presented by the Meadows at Mystic Lake. The Legends of the LPGA Tour is known for its fan-friendly environment with lots of opportunities for autographs, limited roping, and photo ops after the rounds. To learn more about the August 6th and 7th event, stop in or visit golfthemeadows.com. That's golfthemeadows.com. Owned and operated by the Shakopee Minwakanton Sioux community.
If he was an independent, if he was working independently, I think there's a chance. But he's not, and we know that. He's carrying out what they want him to carry out. And it's been an unmitigated disaster, as Stephen A. Smith likes to say.
Yes. And you know, my point with Baldelli was going to be that, well, they fired Paul Molitor right after he won Manager of the Year, but that wasn't their guy. That wasn't their
guy.
They
were chomping the bit to fire Paul.
Yeah. And they had to give him that three-year contract after he won Manager of the Year. I don't think they probably wanted to do that, but they felt like they had no choice. But you're right. I mean, Baldelli is in lockstep with these guys, and he's carrying out, I think, exactly what they want to be executed on the field. And so if that is true, if he is sort of, if they're the puppet masters, as Declan said, you know, and he's just sort of their puppet, and I don't, you know, I tend to agree with Declan there, but I don't know the inner workings of the Twins. But if that's what's happening, then why would they fire him, right? If they just want somebody in there who will put the lineup exactly how they want it, and you know,
and if they fire a guy who they're basically getting to do what they want to do, they're essentially telling the people who pay their salaries, we're firing the guy that's doing the job that we told him to do exactly how we told him to do it. So you're essentially saying we next. If you fire Wes Johnson, you're distancing yourself a little. You're, you know, taking a little bit of a step back from that didn't work out like we thought. So I don't. The more this team plays like they did in Detroit, which, by the way, they cashed it into. Congratulations. You're the only team I saw to keep the All-Star break going because they didn't show up. Like they have far too many players now who have decided we're going golfing mentally. We're done. Because you don't play, you don't do what they did without being checked out.
That was bad. It was really bad. And when you have players openly arguing with each other during the game, like I've very rarely seen that.
Whose side are you on here? Donaldson or Arises?
You know what? I think I love Arise. He might be my favorite player other than Buxton to watch on that team. But I actually see where Donaldson was coming from on that. I went back and looked at that a number of times. You know, Arise had his back turned to home plate and was just kind of standing, you know, a step off second base, and the pitcher was like ready to pitch, you know? And so I understand, you know, I could see how that could be a distraction. And then he sort of turned around, Arise sort of turned around and realized, oh crap, the pitcher's about to throw the pitch and kind of darted off second base. And that's right when Donaldson called time. So I think I'm with Donaldson on that one. But regardless, and I want to get both of your takes on where you come out on this, but regardless of whose side you're on, that those types of things don't happen with a well-functioning ball club. Guys are not fighting, literally yelling at each other during the game on the field. Like, that is a bad look. And then they're fighting in the dugout. And by the way, where was Rocco in that? You know, shouldn't Rocco be
mediating?
That's
the problem. Well, and there's no, and Rocco doesn't want any part of that, which is part of his job.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So that's
exactly.
Part of the
problem. You had Nelson Cruz sitting there moderating the argument.
And I think they told him to go back down into the tunnel to hash it out. And I think so Morneau's characterization of what he thought happened was that Donaldson was upset that Arise didn't have the proper lead at that point in time. I don't think that's it. I think Donaldson is so anal at the plate. He doesn't want a guy essentially screwing around in his in his field of vision area. And I think Donaldson, like the guy was set to pitch, Donaldson, I think, is a very locked-in dude. I mean, we know he's beyond intense. And Arise is like turned around and looking. And Arise was trying to judge where the outfielders were. So it's not like he was screwing around. But I'm with you. I'm on Josh's side. And I think Donaldson was basically saying, dude, when I'm at the plate, I don't want you, as the pitcher's about to pitch, surveying the outfielders. I need you to be probably not only with the proper lead, but if he has the proper lead, I think he's out of Donaldson's sight line too. Because he was right behind the pitcher.
Yeah, I side more with Donaldson just because he's a veteran and I know he's a fiery dude and you can come off as obviously being a butthole, but I typically tend to lean on his side. I know those conversations, I'm glad those conversations happen. To Jake's point, it probably shouldn't have to happen if you have a nice functioning clubhouse, and we've been kind of speculating that clubhouse, there's just something has been off on it basically since the beginning of the season. I still lean more towards Josh and Arise being still a younger player. And I don't mean to, it's not like you have to fall into the guard of, well, he's a young guy and Josh is a veteran and you have to follow and you have to lead by exactly what Josh is telling you. I tend to lead that Donaldson knows what he's talking about in those situations. And Arise probably also didn't handle it in the best way.
Rocco not being there to me is the worst part. He's got to be there. He's got to know what's going on. I mean, it's just his whole look when they're good, the whole live and let live and you screw up is it works. In this case, it doesn't work. So
that's And when you have a Rise out there standing at second base with his arms outstretched, like, come on, man, like what's the problem? And Donaldson's yelling at it. I mean, this just, I don't know what's going on in that clubhouse and none of us do because we don't have access, but like, there's gotta be some serious friction in there, right? I mean, just the way that they're playing and these types of things that are happening and Rocco just, I don't know that he's checked out. I'm not saying he's checked out because I think he cares a lot, but like, he should be there. He should be involved in that. Did he even comment on it post game? I didn't watch it.
I don't know. But yeah, it's going to get worse too, because this weekend gave me the feeling that certain players really have just detached. They're like, All-Star break's done and we suck. And they're exactly right about that. And so guys like Donaldson, to their credit, aren't going to take that well. And so there's going to be more friction now, I think, between probably the few guys that are still engaged and have a lot of pride and the guys who are like, well, we were supposed to be good and we're not. And I mean, that's a people thing. That's how people are. There's going to be people who just basically say, I'm done here. We stink. We got to play these games, 70 or something like that left. But, you know, the lack of focus in that series against the Tigers, and we saw it again yesterday, is a huge red flag. And that's something that only really the manager can try and control. And I don't think Rocco is real good at controlling that. So it's going to be a very intriguing end of the season to see how these personalities mesh as we run through what is going to be probably a miserable couple months.
All right, real quick, let's do a quick yes or no with you guys. I'm going to give you five names. Yes or no, they're going to get traded. Let's start with Donaldson.
No.
Yes or no?
No, because they won't do what they should do. No.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Barrios.
Yes. I think yes.
No.
So I'll say yes on Barrios, no on Donaldson.
By the way, I agree they should trade him if they're not going to sign him. I now have lost all trust.
Yeah. Taylor Rogers.
No. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know if they trust. I would like it to do it, but I don't think they will.
No.
He's the one I want them to trade, I think, maybe even the most.
They should, but no, yeah. they should trade him. They won't trade him.
I agree. I don't think they'll trade him either. Tyler Duffy. We haven't talked about Duffy at all. He's been pretty good. He's in the same contractual situation as Rogers. What do you guys think?
Ooh.
I say yes just because he's fallen off a little bit and you can probably still get something for him. I just don't know the suitors that would be out there for him.
I'll say no.
It's an unknown.
Because they try to get too much and they wouldn't get it.
I'm gonna say yes on Duffy. I think they're gonna move him. I don't think they'll get that much for him, but I think they're gonna move him.
All right.
One more. Let's go with the big one. But this one is for not just July 30th, but through the offseason. Byron Buxton, will he get traded between now and opening day 2022? Yes or no?
Dex?
I'm going to go with no. I think they'll find it's tough, but I think they'll find the common ground and lock him up to a deal this winter. I think it happens. So I'm going to go with no.
Unfortunately, I'm going to go with yes.
Wow. Wow.
But not by July 30th. So the winter they'll trade him.
Man, I'm going to go with no. I would be massively disappointed if they traded him. Massively disappointed.
I think he's going to tell them that he wants out. I think he's going to say, I really don't trust you guys. I need a fresh start. Right or wrong, it'd be easy to convince yourself that wearing a new jersey might change your luck a little bit. I think he'd love to go to like Atlanta or something like that. I'm going to say yes. I don't want it, but I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a possibility,
Georgia's
but that would
home.
Just be, it would be so disappointing. Yeah, you're right. I'm sure he would love to go to Atlanta. So, absolutely.
All right, sir. We're done. We'll talk to you next Monday. Okay.
All right, guys. Thank you.